This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Wednesday. I've got a Stein on the horizon. That's right. Jeff Stein will apparently decide to grace us with his presence today. I know he's leading the big lifestyle down in Iowa, which is, I guess, means you get extra servings of pork and corn. But I don't know why I'm so cold. And by the way, would I turn that down? Have you had the good pork chops down there, man?
I've seen the pictures of the pork tenderloin sandwiches that are as big as your face.
Oh, gosh. And those people down there have big faces, too. I'm just going to let you know. Oh, corn on the cob, man. I'm sorry. I'm starting to get out of this winter thing. I think it's going to be Friday, where on Friday we've got a few things we got going on here. I don't want to jinx one of them, but we should have Dermot Flanagan from Dublin, Ireland, again on St. Patrick's Day. Well, hopefully sober. No guarantees. Actually, it's a very different holiday in Ireland than it is here. In America, it's green beer, and I'm Irish. You know, that's what you get here. We dye rivers green. We have nice little parades. It's much more of a... I'm not saying there aren't some parties, and I'm not saying there aren't some drinking. But my friends over there, it's kind of almost like a Thanksgiving and a bit of, you know, kind of a traditional country's religious holiday in there and drinking. So, you know, it is a little bit more there. They have very nice, fancy feasts, a la our Thanksgiving sort of thing. But it's a different thing. So we'll hopefully have Dermot. We've got to make that phone call to Dermot. We're hopefully trying to get through to Ireland on St. Patrick's Day is not an easy call to make. Hello. All right. We'll try to route you through Kilkenny and see if that works. All right. Oh, you're going down to Sligo. Are we? Are we? 952-946-6205. It is nice to be outside and watch that damn snow melt. Oh, can I melt you? Oh, you bastard. You melt. Although it is pretty remarkable how much snow is still out there. You especially go down some of the residential streets. It is nuts. We're supposed to get a little snow tomorrow. And it seems to be getting less, which is good. Initially, they were saying a ton. And now I think it's, you know, 1 to 4 inches or something like that.
Yeah, they downgraded the winter weather, a winter storm watch to a winter weather advisory.
All right, okay, so that's good. I'm okay with that. It was at one point one of the models had like 2 feet of snow. So yeah, now we're down to 2 inches of snow. So, you know, we're gonna get a little snow tomorrow. It's supposed to cool down. It's supposed to be in the 40s next week. But my guess is going to be sometime rally around late March or all of a sudden going to start getting 50s just out of the blue. And that will hopefully take care of things there. Needless to say, drive safe. It does sound like north of us could be a little bit of an issue. Kind of in a stretch coming from like Mankato up towards Duluth, up that way.
I've got a friend who lives on the south shore of Lake Superior. They're going to get probably about another foot and a half.
Oh, God, man. On the south shore, on Wisconsin side?
Yeah, Ashland, and okay. Bayfield, that area.
Oh, I could not. My cousin lives over up on the UP and by the north shore, and she talks about, she'll show me pictures of these snowfalls. I just could not do that. That is one of the reasons why I won't live in mountains. That and volcanoes. Not a big fan of those. But the mountains, you know, you get up there and it's like, oh yeah, down below it drizzled. Up here, it's 16 feet of snow. It seems a little bit odd, but no, I'm okay in Minneapolis, St. Paul. Kicks ass. Love this town. It's fantastic. If I can put out the other day, you and I were talking. Sent our best. In regards to the the snowmobile accident that was out there. Do you remember we were talking about that?
Yeah, yeah.
And all of a sudden, I had the guy's name in my mind. It blank.
Torrey Westrum.
Thank you, Torrey Westrum. We said, you know, hey, I disagree with you completely on a lot of things, but I don't want to see you hurt. And, you know, if you didn't see the story, Torrey Westrum, what piqued my interest was about this was he had a snowmobile accident. I said, isn't he blind? I think he had an accident when he was a kid, and he did. Had an accident when he's a kid, and he's blind. And so it was. I found out, I went and read the story. It was, I think his 13, 14-year-old family member was driving the snowmobile. He was riding with him, hit a chunk of ice. He got thrown, was complaining about some back issues. Dude, I can attest, I sympathize 100%. I know what that's like. All my best. I disagree with you politically. I do not want to see you hurt, injured, suffering. That is not a good thing. All my best to them. We get the story last night. I don't know if you saw this one, Patrick. Senate Majority Leader Carrie Dietzick she says she had successful surgery at the University of Minnesota on Monday to remove a cancerous tumor. She plans to return to the Capitol soon. Dietzick, DFLer from Minneapolis, issued a statement late Tuesday saying that she had an abnormal pap smear in December and that the additional test revealed she had cancer. On Friday, her doctors determined that she should have surgery on Monday. Her statement said the senator didn't indicate where the tumor was or whether she'll be needing additional treatment, such as chemotherapy or radiation. She was able to vote from home on Tuesday. So all our best there. I mean, Carrie is we've had her on the show multiple times. She's absolutely a delight. And she's doing a great job there as the Senate Majority Leader. All my best there with this, and I hope you do heal up there from everyone here at AM 950 to both Carrie and to Torrey Westrum. All our best there. Hopefully things are going to go well for you. 952-946-6205. So, I get tested sometimes. Because of people like Drazkowski. Steve Drazkowski. And if you did not catch the story, he just... We played the clip yesterday where he basically made fun and diminished the plight of hunger in Minnesota, which is a real big problem. But because this jackass doesn't seem to think that it is a problem, he dismissed it and you know, mocked it. Now, they were talking about a bill that would basically pay for all, you know, students to get free meals from school, breakfast and lunch, and so that there wouldn't be food insecurity there. And what upsets, I think, a lot of people on the right is that a lot of people on the right loved what used to be going on. And just in the last 20 years, we've addressed this issue where we would have stories of a grown adult running over to a 7-year-old, yanking a tray from them in the middle of a lunchroom, screaming, "You don't have enough money for the hot food. You go get the cold meal." As they would take a tray of food and throw it in the garbage can with a smirk on their face, like, "Gotcha." And they thought that this was somehow decency in this sort of thing. You know, no, that's horrible. That's just horrible. And it comes from the people that like that and want that to be this kind of world are demented, broken people that are sad that no one loves. And that is just that. Everyone involved that thinks that's great, from the cafeteria worker who was gleefully ripping trays out of young children's hands as they were hungry, to the parents and politicians who are like, "Yay, public shaming's great." They're horrible, broken, dark, twisted people. The Senate, by the way, didn't vote, and 4 Republicans, I guess reading the room as far as their districts go, Jim Abler, Coleman, Duckworth, and Housley, all who are metro area, the remaining metro area senators, I think they're realizing they're kind of becoming an endangered breed, so they went along with this. So this was a bipartisan bill. Governor Walz will soon sign the bill. As well, making Minnesota school breakfast and lunches Currently only available to students whose family apply based on their income level, available to all students. Wall said the DFL firmly backed using some of the state's $17.5 billion projected surplus to fund the program, which will cost about $200 million a year. Once again, Republicans that voted against this furious because that money needs to go to wealthy people for tax breaks that will never come back to us. During the course of the debate on Tuesday, comments made by Republican jackass Steve Drazkowski has spread wildly on social media and even come to the attention of national outlets such as NBC, Rolling Stone, Washington Post, Vanity Fair. Vanity Fair, I posted their article, which described his comments as uniquely evil as he registered his opposition to the bill, partly because he's never met anyone who is hungry. Wow. Well, this could, I mean, well, the truth is, do you really think this guy actually goes out into areas and actually meets his constituents, talks to the people? No, I get the real vibe from Drazkowski that it's pay to see, that basically, unless you're a Republican who's making a donation, he does not have time for you, and so he doesn't care about the people of his district. And it's interesting, as he made these comments, "Mr. President, I've yet to meet a person in Minnesota that is hungry," he said. Who includes parts of Olmsted, Goodhue, Wabasha, Winona, and Dakota counties in southeast Minnesota. "Yet today I have yet to meet a person in Minnesota who says they don't have access to enough food to eat. Now, I should say that hunger is a relative term. I had a cereal bar for breakfast. I guess I'm hungry now." That may be the definition of the bill. He basically dismissed hunger as not a real problem that doesn't exist. Even though I've seen people from his district post about, I think it was in Wabasha County, the need, the amount of people that have been requesting food assistance actually went up in the last year. But he doesn't see that. He is an embarrassment. He is a national embarrassment, but this is who they are. Now, I want to say two things here, and I want to start off with one that is near dear to my heart. Once again, you do or don't do whatever it is you do or don't want to do. I'm Christian. I am. Go to church. I'm going to a Lutheran church now, have gone to a Catholic church. If you look at his bio, he says he's Catholic. He's not Christian. Dude, come on. Steve, you can't be a Christian. No, if you are, you're the worst Christian who's ever lived. Well, maybe not Judas, but you're getting kind of close there. What do you think? What do you think that when in the book of Matthew, when he says feed the hungry, does Jesus go out there and say, "Did you have a breakfast bar? Are you just hungry now because you had your breakfast bar?" I don't remember Jesus doing that, jackass. I'm tired of you clowns wrapping yourself up in your Bibles. And by the way, shame on any religious leader in his district that allows him to use them as a prop, because that guy is not Christian. Is not Christian. You can't say the things that he says and claim to be Christian because you clearly do not have read the Bible. You don't know what Jesus did. My God, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, man. And so shame on any religious organization, any church, any priest, anyone in the diocese that validates this guy. Because those are the direct teachings of Jesus himself. Feed the hungry. Not be a perpetual jackass and an embarrassment to the state of Minnesota, you godforsaken human being. You're a horrible person. You are. You are a horrible person. Today he's talking about, apparently there's a bunch of snowflakes. Dude, no. You're a jackass. You know you're a jackass. You're proud of being a jackass. We all see it. You're just a douche, man. You're just a horrible human being. You just are, and you're proud of it. And it only probably warms the heart of your voters down there to see you going out there, yay, go against the hungry. By the way, do I have enough food tonight? You're an embarrassment. You're acting like you're trying to act like I'm owning the libs. Dude, no. You're not owning anyone. You're embarrassing yourself. You're demeaning the hunger that exists in your own district, as well as the entire state of Minnesota, where there is a ton of need for hunger with people with hunger. My God, we just had a story out where elderly people were dying of malnutrition. They weren't getting enough food. Don't you dare. Do not, Steve Drazkowski, and once again, any church, any priest down there that allows that guy to wrap themselves in your Bible, your church, your parish, shame on you. Shame on you. You should be calling Steve Drazkowski. You should be saying, what's this about the hungry? They don't need help? What's that? Because that's really against what the Bible says. Dude, you suck at being Christian. You just do. You're a horrible, horrible human being. Now, I got more on you, jackass, because there's some stories that we've kind of forgotten over time, but I remember them, and I went and found them. So we'll read them from way back when with your 14-year-old daughter, right? Oh, yeah. We'll talk about that. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. I want every person out there, if you see Steve Drazkowski, now, if you don't want to do this, you don't have to do this by any means. This is not about forcing religion on anyone. But if you are a Christian and you see Steve Drazkowski, I want you to walk up to him and ask, do you think Jesus really would have approved of your stance on feeding the hungry? And watch him, hamna, 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 hamna. You know, he already looks like he's, you know, half Edgar Winter at this point. You know, you might as well make that scare into him. It'll look like it. You know, nice job, Tombstone. You know, he is just a horrible person. And right now, he's probably self-gratifying thinking about the fact that, man, McNeil hates me. You probably are. Because the only thing that matters to them, his religion, he's just made a mockery of the entire religious experience. The entire thing. He's made a mockery of it. Because the most important thing to him is not Jesus or Christianity or Catholicism. It isn't. It's owning those libs. And he thinks that by saying hungry people don't exist when they exist everywhere is somehow owning the libs. It really is amazing the inability of these people to feel shame. But we can sure do that when, once again, if you see him, he says he's Catholic. So if you want to bring out the passages from Matthew, by all means, knock yourself out and say, do you really think that Jesus would be for your anti-hunger rant? It's going to be like one of those Scooby-Doo dust clouds, man. This is a story, I think it's from 2006, but some of this fun stuff goes back to 2004. This is back when the Senate District 28 was the district down there. Candidate Steve Drazkowski called for an end to the personal attacks against him. What a freaking snowflake. You know, he's a tough guy. Oh, he's a whiny little biatch. He really is. He acts like he's a tough guy, but man, you know, it's all act. He's not tough at all. He's not. He's just a wuss. You're kitty, 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 kitty. He is. But he acts like a tough guy, but back then he had some issues that came to light. And all he was asking for personal privacy. As he just said, there are no hungry people in the state of Minnesota, or at least he hasn't seen any of them, and henceforth used that as justification for his reason to not feed the hungry people of Minnesota. I'd appreciate it if my opponent's supporters would leave my family alone, the Republican candidate said Friday back in 2006 in an interview. The documents hosted by a pro-Democratic blog include details of Drazkowski's ongoing custody battle. Among the documents is a deposition given in September by his 15-year-old daughter stating she felt tired of feeling used during, and those are in quotes, tired of feeling used in quotes, during her stays with her father. I also feel that one of the reasons my dad wants me to come stay with him is his campaign, she stated in the affidavit filed September 5th in Winona County District Court. However, the girl, Kinsey Drazkowski, endorses her father in a radio commercial. She closes the commercial by saying, I want you to know my dad will be there for you like he's been there for me. Boy, Kinsey, have I got a story about your dad you need to read, because he's not there for everyone. He doesn't think hungry people exist, apparently. Or he wants to make a kind of a snarky little comment about a breakfast bar. Got him. Owning the libs. So, yeah, I mean, Kinsey, I'm going to tell you the truth. If this is what you really think, you're going to be so disappointed in your dad. Ugh, horrible. Drazkowski's commercial appears to have recorded after the deposition was taken. Asked if he's been subjecting his daughter to campaigning against her will, Drazkowski said, definitely not. Excuse me. Definitely not. Claims made in the deposition are an outgrowth. I mean, presuming. I'm adding dramatic flair, Patrick. That's all I'm doing is adding dramatic flair. Claims made in the deposition are an outgrowth of a difficult custody battle with his ex-wife, she said, and not the truth. All these things are posturing by my ex-wife in order to place her in a better position for a custody battle, he said. Once again, just adding some theatrics. The deposition accompanies a motion by his ex-wife calling for Drazkowski to be allowed parenting time with the child only as she, Carla Drazkowski, pleases. The matter next faces a November 17 motion hearing in Winona. I don't know. I don't know how the whole thing worked out. I was trying to find that story, but I couldn't hear. I'm just reading this one. Steve Drazkowski, who's been remarried for 4 years, says his relationship with his daughter is great and is improving, stressing that he's been an extremely responsible father to the girl. As heard in the radio ad, Drazkowski admitted the relationship has been rocky at times. These circumstances have thrown a bunch of challenges at it. Early this year, Drazkowski was acquitted in Wabasha County jury for domestic assault charges stemming from an October 2005 incident where authorities allege he hurt his daughter while disciplining her. Whew. Ow. Wow, that sounds horrible. Since then, Drazkowski has pushed for changes to what he's referred to as overzealous system that he claims undermines parents' authority to correct children's behavior. That doesn't sound ominous at all. But I'm sure that he's got a great relationship with Kinsey, who apparently now lives in Virginia. Not Virginia, Minnesota. Virginia, the state, it looks like. So, you know, you got to go to one of the coasts, you know, if you don't want to be anywhere near something. I'll just say it like that. It's just an observation. Could be just a job. I don't know. My kids, they're looking to stay in Minnesota after they get done with college, so. I see them. I like them. We get along. It's great. Nothing about, maybe they'll get offered you. I don't know, but your daughter's nowhere nearby here. But tell me more about that bill where basically you insist that people need to have more control and stop the system that undermines parents' authority to correct children's behavior. What's that about there, Steve? Big man. What's that about, man? What's that about, tough guy? Come on, man. What is that about? Come on. Come on, man. What's that about? A person that says what you said yesterday just loves being a jerk. So come on, man. Why don't you talk about all this stuff? Why don't you just come out here and own us all? Come on, man. I'm calling you out. Come on, Steve. Because you see, as I not only would be against, you know, undermining the ability of people to stop parents from overzealously disciplining a child. I disagree with you on that issue. But as well, I agree as a Christian, because I don't know if you've read Matthew, Mark, Luke, John. I don't think you have at all. Because if you are Christian, then your comments really would be, you're going to go burn, man. I'm just going to say it. That's a very anti-Christian comments. Because we're supposed to feed the hungry, because that's what I'm going to do. So that's the case. So you think you're owning the libs by basically dismissing, insulting, and demeaning the hungry of the state of Minnesota. And I'm calling you out, you jackass. So, good times. Hey, chair's waiting for you, Steve. You want to come in on my show? Why don't you come in on my show, man? Why don't you come on over here, big man? Why don't you? Come on. Come on into the studio. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Gosh, what a horror. Hey, thank God we're in national news now for this guy. We'll take a break. Come on back. Jeff Stein, when we do return, it's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
Jeff.
Jeff Stein's our national and presidential expert, noted author. Find his books over at Next Chapter Books, as well as TotallyIowa.com, the Iowa Business Report, the Iowa Politics Report. Come to us from KXEL, Cedar Falls, Waterloo, where Jeff has decided to grace us with his presence.
So I saw on the socials, you got rid of the brace.
I've got rid of Bracey, yeah.
Yeah, and apparently Bracey was like helping you restrain your emotions, because I heard the end of the last sentence.
Oh, yeah.
The last segment. Are you okay, dude?
No, I'm fine. Agitated. You know what? You know what I have a very hard time with? Okay, and mm-hmm. I'll just say this. Okay. I'm a Christian, okay. Right? Mm-hmm. I can't stand people who wrap themselves in Christianity who do the least Christian things they can possibly do. And you saw the thing with Steve Driskowski, I'm presuming, out of the Minnesota Senate, about they're debating the bill about free food for breakfast and lunch for school kids in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
All right. He basically went out there and insisted he's never seen a hungry person in Minnesota. There's not a person he's met that doesn't have enough food. He says that, is hunger? I had a breakfast bar earlier. I'm hungry now. Is that what we're talking about with hunger? He was just you cannot be Christian. The Gospel of Matthew, for goodness sakes, you cannot be a Christian and claim that, we shouldn't feed the hungry. This is right from Jesus' mouth, for goodness sakes. And so I kind of have a really big problem with these guys destroying my religion because it's inconvenient for their political narrative.
Mm-hmm. Well, I tend to find that those who claim to be the most, quote, religious are the ones you need to watch the most.
Yeah.
Just generally. Okay. And I'm sorry if that offends somebody, but the bottom line is, to me, those who like to tell you how full of faith they are, do you need to tell me that? Because it seems to me that you're overcompensating for some other deficiency. I don't know.
Well, it's usually for me. And so, yeah, I was passionate and someone needs to stand up to the bully. That is Steve Driskowski. So mm-hmm. guilty as charged. What I'll say is this, it's the people who's, let me tell you who Jesus wants you to hate. What? It's like, that's not it. And so, and I'm not saying that's what he said, but it's the people that throw away, the gospels, or they basically tell me, what Jesus really wanted you to do is hate gay people. You're like, what in the world? What are you reading? Because no. And my guess is probably one of Paul's letters to someone, but that'd be my guess.
Well, once again, you have a situation where there are certain things you can't say in an argument without it getting just blown out of proportion. Mm-hmm. You can't say Hitler, and you really shouldn't be starting to rely on the Bible. Because, again, people have used those for their own purposes. And, as with most things, check the original source, the Bible.
Yeah, yes.
don't take my word for it. Go to the original source. Wait,
this doesn't say border wall.
Well, that's in the margin. Did you not see what was written in the margin?
Oh, Church of England, man. That was a wacky time, man. That Church of England.
Okay.
All right.
Church of England reference.
Yeah, there we go.
I did not have Church of England reference on my Matt McNeil Show bingo card today.
Buckle up, man. This show goes all over the place like a ferret on a double espresso. So let's go to the banking issue. Here is what I find to be amazing about this. Mm-hmm. All right. So we have Dodd-Frank that gets passed after the banks basically commit suicide in 2008, 2009. And, mm-hmm. and it was kind of destined for that to happen because they were not regulating themselves. In 2018, Trump, Republicans, some Democrats, and more than a handful, like 10, 15 Democrats, all said, we do not need to regulate banks whose wealth containment is $50 billion to $250 billion, what is considered a mid-level bank. They were lobbied big by banks like Silicon Valley Bank, as well as others, to basically ease up the rules. The second they did, these banks immediately started engaging in bad behavior. In the case of Silicon Valley, they started getting into riskier and riskier real estate investments, which had great return for their executives. They were getting big pay bonuses. They were getting big pay increases. And then all of a sudden, interest rates changed, and they were basically held out to dry because they were not doing their due diligence as a bank. Now, here we are. So clearly, lesson learned. We cannot trust banks. We've learned this the second time now in 20 years. We cannot trust banks to regulate themselves. We just can't. And the amount of people, including Democrats, who are out there right now saying, no, the big problem here is regulation. And you're like, what?
Well, here's, you very accurately state that there are folks on all sides of the political spectrum who have some guilt or have some blame to receive on this. So this is one of these things where the money that the banks had to make contributions and to lobby, etc., that's one of the big problems with Washington. Mm-hmm. All right, so twice in a 15-year period, we now have seen huge issues when banks are not watched and regulated. And frankly, this could have been prevented had there been some increased government oversight with the existing rules. Had you had honest people who were not in it for themselves running the banks.
Yeah.
Had you not had the Fed do what it did with interest rates that then started turning us upside down in a variety of bond levels. The bottom line is it's a perfect storm. Okay. But do you want to have a perfect storm every decade or decade and a half? Or do you want to say, you know, it seems these storm clouds are brewing much more frequently. Maybe we ought to do something. Because I understand the idea of saying the government needed to come in and guarantee deposits or we were going to have a huge problem. Well, here's what we need to figure out. We cannot treat the McNeil family's savings account, which is guaranteed, insured up to $250,000 by the FDIC, the same way we treat the checking account of Roku, for crying out loud, right? At $600 million, whatever it was, some monopoly money level. You put that in the bank, and then you say, well, yes, I did understand that each account has a limit of $250,000, but we didn't think that meant us. There's got to be some other way so that these companies don't flood the bank with money and then come to the government for a handout. And I picked on Roku because it was the most egregious example. Who does that? There are other places where you put your money. There are other, not just banks. But the concept of saying we've got these huge deposits and they're only insured to a certain level, you're old enough to remember when it was $100,000. Mm-hmm. I barely remember that it was less than that in the past. So we moved it to $250,000 when inflation hit. All right, maybe we have to do some of that again. But come on, people, this is not the kind of thing you need. At the same time, Matt, we have a debt ceiling issue. Mm-hmm. The markets are already skittish. We've got the Fed. All right, should they raise basis by 25 basis points 1 week from today? Should it be 50? Should it be none? We have so much fear and uncertainty. And then this thing happens and the dominoes go across the ocean as well.
Here's, there is a tendency to not want to blame the executives of the bank. And I'm not saying you're not, you've said this, but really you only need to look at them because there are plenty of banks that do not have a problem right now that have did not get into risky investments. If you have a restaurant that lobbies your government to basically ease up on food safety restrictions, and then they do. And then that restaurant, because they've cut back on and they've gotten riskier, they're saving money and pocketing the cash by getting, mystery meat, and they end up killing three people with food poisoning. No one looks at them and say, you know what the real problem here is? The food inspector. No, the problem is we cannot as a country because, and just whatever you want to call it, the age of greed, Reaganomics, whatever the case may be, this rise in corporate America since the 1980s, which have placed the executive class at a higher pedestal than the customers, the investors, the shareholders, the employees, they have placed themselves at the pinnacle. And because of that, they basically feel as if the company exists for their benefit. And if we, you know, if you ease up these regulations, these people clearly cannot be trusted, because this breakdown in 5 years literally could not. I mean, I've read from two economists that said this could not have happened faster. This is the minimal amount of time. So the second that those regulations were eased up was the second that those banks started going down this path.
Well, at the very least, the people who at the bank allowed it to happen, and I'm being very generous with the phrase allowed it to happen, they engineered it, all right? They are the ones who are the most guilty parties in this whole thing. They abdicated their responsibility to their own shareholders, to the depositors, et cetera. So there cannot be enough fault put on the people who ran the bank, as far as I'm concerned. Okay, now that's number one. With regard to the concept of banks generally, and I don't care if we're talking large or small banks, the point of the bank is to what? Make money. Banks fail when they lose money. So that's why they loan money at X percent and they give you interest on your savings at X minus some factor. If it ever gets upside down to where they pay you more in interest than they charge somebody for borrowing money, by definition, the whole thing is bad. Mm-hmm. And that's why banks work so hard to over-collateralize accounts. I remember in my days as a lawyer, I had a client who came in and said, they were refinancing the house and the bank wanted to put the house and the two cars and put all of this stuff on there. And the cars had not been encumbered. They were paid for. And I called because I happened just to know it was a small town. I knew the bank president. And I just said, I don't understand. He goes, well, we always ask for that. I said, you don't need that. The amount of the loan, you've got well more equity in the house. You're not going to go upside down on this. What they were trying to do was to attach everything so that they had even more collateral, because if the party wanted to sell the car, then they had to get the note refinanced again. I mean, it was a sneaky little move to nickel and dime these people. I'm just here to tell you, I'm sure there are some wonderful, benevolent bankers. I just don't really know them.
Well,
and so you're dealing with an industry that by definition is dealing with money and has wads of it. So you really want them weighing in on government regulation?
Well, and here's where, and you're right in the sense being, if you just did that, most of these banks would never be in trouble, because your job is to money in, money out. You keep track of the interest rates. You do this. You keep your money in relatively safe investments. It's not a big problem. And as a matter of fact, that's what a lot of banks do. They do their due diligence. They don't want to get risky. It's not about owning a jet. It's not about any of this stuff. When you look back at what happened in 2008, when you look at these banks here, which sure seems to be, and the fact that Biden immediately said, yeah, we're firing every executive here, basically, it implies to me that's the evidence I need enough. They're taking the bank's money, the big lump of money that they're supposed to have there, and they're getting risky with it, because it's like Vegas. Sure, if you get a great payout, you can make a lot of money, but if you all of a sudden those investments go south because they go down south really quick, aka crypto or something like that, it kind of blows up in your face. And if you are someone who's supposed to be in charge of a lot of money, these guys, they weren't looking at their bank's liquidity as something they needed to preserve. They were looking at it as a poker chip, because if they could get big savings, that meant a big bonus, that made big pay raises. And this is why you have to regulate them, is because it's beyond just the banking, because a regular banking system should never get risky. Almost all the time when these banks fail today, especially since the SNL savings and loans scandal back, remember that was it's when these guys got really risky with what's supposed to be their liquidity, their money that they're supposed to stand by, and that's all of a sudden it disappears, and it's a ticking time bomb at that point.
When do you earn a bonus? When you're doing well.
Yep.
They're handing out bonuses when they're on the cusp of federal regulators coming in to shut them down. I'm not saying that they knew that the regulators were at the front door and they were hustling money out the back door. I have no reason to think that. But when you look at any company's performance, any nonprofit's performance, you're giving bonuses at a time. See, bonuses are not entitlements. Your salary is your entitlement. You work, you get your salary. You earn the bonus. you earn the bonus because you have done successfully, you know, tremendously well in terms of bringing in the revenue. These people getting these bonuses as if it is part of the regular compensation package, no matter how poorly they do. Shut up. This is ridiculous. Now, keep in mind, we do have some pressure. You and I, as depositors, I just noticed in the newspaper last night. Yes, I still read newspapers. Mm-hmm. I saw in the newspaper an ad for a bank, and it was an introductory CD rated 4.7% here, 5% there. And that attracted my attention. Okay, so banks are offering higher interest rates to get a new customer in. In the old days, it was a free toaster. Now I don't need a toaster. I need, okay, so, but they're not going to be able to offer that for a long time or even offer it at all unless everything else is in order. And I have to assume that as a depositor, we lose that assumption, the whole system crashes.
Who was W's Treasury Secretary in, I think it was November of 2008, who came on out and made the all-time, I need you to give me $1 billion. You can't ask where it goes. You can't ask for receipts. Just give me the money. And of course, even the Republicans were like, no, we're not going to do this. And what you found out later was, as you talk about Christmas bonuses, that was the entire point. All these executives at these banks that had failed because there was no money left in their bank and they insisted they should get paid their Christmas bonuses were then basically used their lobbying leverage to get that Treasury Secretary to basically ask for taxpayer monies just to pay failed banking executives a Christmas bonus. I thought that was, I mean, if there's anything that shows you how delusional these people get if they're not regulated, it's that.
That's the definition of chutzpah, we really want to go there. But again, could we not, how do I phrase this? So you've got the guy running the bank, selling a huge amount of bank stock. No, he knows what's going to happen.
Yes.
I mean, how do we trigger this so that, what was he saying? Well, you know, Buffy's college fund is getting a little light. I'd better sell $1 gazillion of stock. I mean, come on. Does that not trigger anything by anyone? Apparently not.
Well, it's we're talking about dollar figures that are so obscene that, you know, it's there should be more regulation. And we used to do it, and we just don't anymore. And we're seeing the outcome because you might be right.
Look, I know we're talking about you could personally take care of the deposits of the bank. That's walking around money for a guy like McNeil. I get that. But as a man of the people, you can relate to how the rest of us must feel when we see those shenanigans happen.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah, the minions, yes. I do see what happens to those people, yes. Yes. Hello.
The ones you stepped on to get into the door of the control room today.
Hello, people down there. Yeah, that's it. All right. 952-946-6205. We'll come on back. Maybe we'll go Trump DeSantis here because it's starting to get good. Jeff Stein joining us right now. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950.
Billboard, baby, do a leap and make them dance when they come on. Everybody looking for a dance, throw the run on.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Jeff Stein joining us. I don't know if, did you catch that moment when Trump's lawyers were trying to frantically grab the paper out of Ari Melber's hand during the interview?
I believe, as you pointed out on the Twitter machine, nothing says innocence like grabbing for papers during an interview.
I love the person who sent me the Nathan Thurm, the old Martin Short lawyer from Saturday Night Live, whose cigarette was the oldest long ash. I don't know who's accusing me. I'm not accusing you. Why are you so defensive? I'm not saying anything. Trump is definitely
very thick glasses. Wasn't that
it was? Yeah. Just such that greased back hair. Oh, fantastic character. I wish you'd bring that one back. Trump is clearly feeling the footsteps of DeSantis. I don't know how concerned he should be because I do not see within the Trump faithful a willingness, at least any on a massive scale, of a shift to openness to shift to someone else. They still seem to be fairly ensconced in the Trump camp. But at the same time, I think he's wanting to, because this is one thing that Trump does really well when it comes to campaigning, he knows how to take out the opponents. And so he has now got DeSantis in his eyes, in his spotlight. He is watching him, and he's going on the attack there. Talk a little bit about that, because I do think DeSantis, the thing that people say about DeSantis is just not a real good public speaker, people person. You know, Clinton was a great people person. That's how he got that nomination, was he went out there and he was able to relate. That DeSantis, there are real concerns that he has, and that he just does not have the personality to offset Trump.
So he showed up, DeSantis did, on his book tour. And I know every time you release a book, you go to Nevada, Iowa, and New Hampshire. Those are the three states.
The Meccas. It's
complete coincidence there on that part. But so he gets up. And this is why DeSantis is going to have a hard time resonating in Iowa. His whole pitch is, look at how well I did in Florida. So he gets up on the stage, okay, of a theater on the stage in Davenport and Des Moines, two different places. He's there with Iowa's governor, who has been going around with all of these candidates, just kind of welcoming them and staying neutral. So he gets up and talks about this list of things that they did in the state of Florida. And you've got an Iowa audience who are saying, yeah, we did that. Yeah, we did that. Yeah. So what? You know, in other words, it doesn't sell here the way that it might in some other states. And this is the first proving ground. Now, keep in mind, Trump did not win Iowa in 2016. Ted Cruz did. So Trump comes in to Davenport 3 days after DeSantis, has a very subdued event. It was not with people jumping up and down on the risers behind him. He was in a theater. It was a very well managed. And they're saying that the Trump campaign is going to be far more disciplined this time as opposed to 2016, because he can't afford to lose in Iowa. So you've got a couple of things going on. You've got the fact that he is still popular in the state. You've got the fact that the chief opponent, DeSantis, does not have the advantage in Iowa that he might in other states. And you now have Trump showing up acting, quote unquote, presidential, the very thing that everybody said he didn't do before. So it's a very different Trump that we have seen so far in Iowa. But boy, did he sharpen the knives with regard to nicknames and everything on the plane in, at the podium, and on the plane out. And again, it just comes down to, this guy would be nothing without me, and so you need to vote for me because he's an ungrateful louse.
Meatball Ron, he needs to go with that one. That's a great, a great take.
He rejected that one. He specifically rejected that one in favor of, get this one, Tiny D. He's going to mingle Tiny D with DeSanctimonious.
Wow.
And I have to tell you, this is the bad thing, very quickly. When DeSantis is on the stage talking about how great he is, he looks like the sanctimonious guy.
Yeah.
It's just the way it is.
You and I said this when he started poking around. Yes. Can a guy from Florida win a national election? He's not going to resonate in Iowa. He's not going to resonate in New Hampshire either. South Carolina, maybe Nevada, possibly, maybe in Vegas. But, you know, that's a problem for him. Florida is not the win he thinks it is.
Well, you tell me what you think of his book once you finish reading it, because I'm sure it's on your night table.
Okay. I have it. It's like a wave machine. I have it on audiobook. It just keeps me sleeping nicely at night.
that's helpful in your condition.
Jeff Stein, once again, the Iowa Politics Report. I'll post later. Great to have you back, Jeff. I missed you. We'll talk to you next week, hour two. That's coming up next. Hour number two of the show on your Wednesday, Matt McNeil. A lot of people liking Jeff today. What the heck is that? Hey, you know, I guess even a blind pig finds a treble now and then. 9-5. Please, someone make sure Jeff knows I said that. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. So we are down to, from our apocalypse snow, it is now down to 2 inches. Did you see that, Patrick? That's the good news. It sounds like it's going to rain a ton, but it's going to be 39 degrees. We shouldn't, the snow should kind of disappear again, which is nice.
Yeah, really nice.
39 tomorrow, 18 on Friday. That's cool. But then, 40. Ooh, we got close to 50 on Thursday next week. That will take care of some things. Melt. I'm digging this. I think that the only reason we are seeing kind of snow still pile up is just because there's so much snow still on the ground. It's kind of cooling down things. So 952-946-6205. Hey, do you hear that, Patrick? I want to make sure you're involved in this discussion here really quick. I don't know if you saw the story, but apparently Aaron Rodgers says he wants to become a New York Jet.
I did see that, and it's pretty much going to be done, so that will be fun and exciting when that happens.
I am actually very concerned. Are you concerned about Wisconsin fan? Because they had a, let's face it, they had a run there between the Green Bay Packers and the Wisconsin Badger football team that was really pretty rare that you don't see, in a, especially in a standalone state, where the football team is relatively dominant for 20 years, 25 years. And, I mean, when did Favre start playing? Do you remember off the top of your head?
1992.
Favre started playing in 92. So, wait, 30 years. 30 years of success. And when Alvarez got to Wisconsin, I mean, that Wisconsin was a garbage football team until Alvarez got there, and then he basically built that program. They haven't been the same since he stepped down as head coach. I mean, I think he's still AD over there. But, you know, there was a lot of pride. I just don't know how they're going to do, because every time I call anyone in Wisconsin, it's the same damn conversation. Packers! Badgers! And, you know, what they don't want to remember is in the 80s, no one wanted to go to those Packer games. No one was going to the Packer games. They were so, do you remember when Jim McMahon and the Bears went to Green Bay, and they were so bad, and they just didn't want to be beat, that the guy hit him like 20 yards out of bounds. Do you remember that? And hurt him.
Yeah. No, that actually very well could have changed the entire trajectory of the Bears franchise, actually, that hit.
Here's the thing I feel sorry for, and I know I don't want to necessarily get into sports. You know this as well as I do, Patrick. They're going to get a ton of draft picks here. People keep thinking what's going to happen is what happened when the Vikings traded for Herschel Walker, and we have to give the Dallas Cowboys credit there, because it's one thing to get a draft pick. It's another thing to continually pick, with every one of them, almost Hall of Fame career players, which built that team up dramatically. I mean, they really mastered those draft picks. Usually it doesn't go that well. Usually you might get one or two. Say you get five draft picks, you might get one superstar, two guys that are good, two guys that end up not working out. It's not like the Dallas Cowboys did, where basically every pick they got was almost a super, it was almost an all-star and a Hall of Famer in some cases. The Packers, they don't have anything there. I mean, their wide receiver just left, right? Was it Lazard just left, went to the Jets?
Yep.
He's their best wide receiver, right?
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Who's the quarterback over there now?
On the Packers?
Yeah.
Jordan Love, was the guy they picked in the first round that every, you know, 'cause they traded back into the first round to pick him, and all of us had a collective what the unsafe for radio word when they did that.
Here's the thing I'll say about Aaron Rodgers. As a guy that undermined Favre as much as he could so he could put himself in that position, the idea of Love undermining him and putting himself in the position, he basically did everything in his power to make sure that was never going to happen. So I just, could they go on out there and draft, I'm going to presume it's going to be 5-6 draft picks. Could they draft a bunch of superstars? Maybe. They're not going to be anything. I mean, it's going to be hard on them. And like I said, as a guy who every Wisconsin conversation for the last 30 years has been, hey, I don't want to talk about your family. I don't want to talk about the job. Let's talk about the Packers. I don't know if these guys are like 4-12 next year, 4-13. I don't know how these people are going to deal with it. I honestly think it's going to be very difficult for them. Very difficult indeed. To get past that. So 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205 is the phone number. I did want to take a quick moment here to thank Todd Colid, who is sponsoring AM 950 this week. Todd doesn't live here in the metro area anymore. He lives out in Spain, and he does support the radio station by basically sponsoring us. And yeah, it's a great way for you to do so. We're very, very happy that he does. If you'd like more information on how you can do that, 952-946-8885, 952-946-8885. Todd is a big supporter of Lifeline Ukraine. This is a fantastic organization that is doing, they're doing a job over there that is just impossible to comprehend. It is mental health services, suicide prevention for the people of Ukraine. They offer these services for the people who have, are from Ukraine, who have left Ukraine as well. Clearly, the mental anguish of watching your town destroyed, your neighbors killed, your way of life just annihilated by the Russians. These services, these are one of those auxiliary services you generally just don't see get funded at the levels they need to. Lifeline Ukraine is out there doing God's work. They're trying to help out these people the best they can. So if you can help out, Lifeline Ukraine, I'll put the link up a little bit later on. If you can help, please do. It would be I think a very good thing if we can make sure that these people have this level of support as well as also the military support that the country has been giving them. 952-946-6205. Why not? Let's get Gary in Minneapolis. Gare Bear, welcome into the show.
Hi, man. I just have something short to say. I think we here in Minnesota should give a sweetheart deal to Disney World to move to Minnesota.
I'm all for that. I don't think they'll do it because they like the not having to clear snow in winter. But maybe, you know, I think that we could look at a lot of those things down in Florida and say, go ahead and move up here. I guarantee you this. If I won't say this, Gary, if they didn't move to, they don't move to Minneapolis, they move to Atlanta. I guarantee you that everyone in Florida would all of a sudden go, uh-oh. And I mean that DeSantis would frantically be apologizing for what he's done.
Yeah, except for we had a new governor in Georgia too.
Yeah, Kemp.
That guy. I was reading about him. I think he comes from a real super wealthy family, going back to plantations or something. I'm not sure, but that's what I thought it was.
When we had Greg Palast in town.
Good to talk to you, Matt.
Good to talk to you. We had Greg Palast in town. He had the movie about him. Thank you very much, Gary. Good to see you. Good to hear from you today. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. I am so glad Min Post has done this story because this is hard to comprehend. This is hard to wrap your head around. But Minnesota has a connection to this whole thing with the Dominion voting systems. This is, it's unbelievable. This is, I'm going to read this. I'll start off by reading this and I'll get into the story. This is an excerpt from Marlene Bourne's email to former federal prosecutor Sidney Powell, a conservative activist Tom Fitton, and Fox News host Lou Dobbs. Dear Mrs. Powell, Mr. Fitton, and Mr. Dobbs, I was told to email you the following pieces of information. You're probably already aware of the voting irregularities in a number of states, which have one common thread, Dominion voting systems. Now, once again, I'll edit this as we go. That's not true. There has been numerous investigations and over 100 lawsuits where the judge basically looks at the people who are saying there's fraud and saying, we need to see the evidence of your fraud. And they either say, A, we don't have any, or B, well, what we need you to do is let us lock ourselves in the room by ourselves with all the voting machines for the next 15 weeks, and then we'll come out and we'll tell you exactly where the fraud was. And by the way, they actually kind of did that in Arizona and still couldn't find any fraud. Funny story. But I'll kind of go through this. So that was the first question. You're probably already aware of the voting irregularities in a number of states. We have a common thread of Dominion voting systems. Also from this email, don't you find it curious that Nadeem El-Shami, Nancy Pelosi's longtime chief of staff, is a key executive there, and that Richard Bloom, Senator Feinstein's husband, is not only a significant shareholder of that company, but an avid technologist as well? Aha! As a point of reference, back in 2009, Diebold sold their electric machines division. An antitrust suit was immediately filed that conveniently ensured that in 2010, Dominion Voting Systems would acquire the assets in order to restore competition. 2010, what? Oh, that was right. That was a big Republican wave, and I don't think anyone complained back then about voter fraud. Well, never mind. With the acquisition of another large California electric machine company at the same time, by the way, she didn't capitalize California, which, okay, come on. That gave Dominion an even bigger monopoly than Diebold ever had, yet no one has ever filed an antitrust suit against them Friends in High Places, indeed. Oh, I love that. I love that. It's trying to add provenance, but we clearly know what's going on here. Anyway, I'll continue the last little bit from this email here. But the monopoly isn't necessarily the issue. It's the software. A piece of code was inserted such that once ballots were fed into the database for tabulation, up to 3% of voters for Mr. Trump would be automatically switched to Mr. Biden. This is what she sent to them. This is the email. This is an artist who lives in the Twin Cities. This is the email that people point to as the confluence of this whole thing happening. And by the way, if I'm Marlene Bourne, I would be trying to find some country that doesn't have a legal system, because I have a feeling at some point there's going to be a knock on the door and a lawsuit delivered there as well. From the folks at MinnPost, Marlene Bourne, an artist who lives in the Twin Cities area, may be the alleged source of the voter fraud claims that resulted in a $1.6 billion lawsuit against Fox News by Dominion Voting Systems. All Bourne did was write a lengthy email to Sidney Powell, a former federal prosecutor and conspiracy theorist who attempted to overturn the 2020 presidential election. She also copied Fox News host Lou Dobbs and conservative activist Tom Fitton on her email. Sent just hours after Fox and other news outlets had called the election for Biden on November 7th, 2021, Bourne's email said a piece of software was inserted into Dominion voting machines in several states that would automatically change 3% of the votes for Donald Trump for Biden. Wow, if she's got evidence of this, wow, does she have it? I don't think she has evidence of this. The switch votes were capped at 3% because it was determined that anything higher would raise suspicions, Bourne wrote. She also erroneously reported links to congressional critters, including former Speaker Nancy Pelosi's longtime chief of staff, who had had to Dominion voting systems. Bourne told MinnPost in an interview that the idea for voter fraud was a spur-of-the-moment thing because she wasn't really paying attention to the election. You weren't really paying attention to the election, but it didn't stop you at all from talking authoritatively about said election. She said she had never heard of the voting system company before, but heard the name Dominion somewhere that day and began to research the company, relying on her intuition and what she calls a sixth sense, which she says enables her to connect the dots. Oh, I'm sure Fox News is loving that sixth sense right now. It's 1.6 billion cents right now, actually, I believe. It's going to be a lot of money. I am able to connect the dots that don't seem to connect. Oh, God. It's like when you give a kid a connect the dots. And you can tell the connect the dots is going to be like a car. And they give it back to you. And because they haven't followed the numbers at all, that basically it's just scribbles on the page. I'm able to connect things that don't seem to connect. Really? I have this unique vision. I see things that other people don't. You don't say. You don't say. More on this when I do return. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. By the way, a lot of people are happy Jeff is back. There you go. Yeah, you like him. I like him too. He's nice to have back in the house here. Once again, I want to get back to this story here. This is Marlene Bourne. She's an artist that lives in the Twin Cities who herself says she doesn't know that much about the issue. She really wasn't paying much to the election. But after Trump had lost, she scrambled and started doing research and ended up sending an email to Sidney Powell, Lou Dobbs, Tom Fitton, that basically said, that clearly Dominion, and very clearly stated that Dominion had done things which Dominion had not done, and basically had you know, it was guilty of stealing the election for Donald Trump. And I'm going to read this last quote from her. She's talking to MinnPost. I'm able to connect things that don't seem to connect, she said. I have this unique vision. I see things that other people don't. Bourne said she used her highly attuned awareness and ability to find a common thread to investigate Dominion voting systems. One of her first discoveries was that Dominion was a Canadian company. Dun, dun, dun. There's a lot of Canadian companies, all right? Isn't that in itself foreign interference, Bourne asked. Dominion has a headquarters in Denver, Colorado, by the way, as well as headquarters in Toronto. So they have a U.S. headquarters here. They're not like it's all run out of, hey, let's fix the election up there, eh? Okay, it's about time. Hey, ooh, hockey. You know, it's, I mean, I'm presuming that's what most boardrooms in Canada are like. Oh, oh, hey, it's Canada. It's, oh, look, there's snow. Who likes syrup? Bigfoot, hockey, America. Yay, Canada business. Do like their ginger ale. Canada Dry is a fine ginger ale, folks. Okay, let's just be honest. Bourne said it took her about an hour to piece together her information about Dominion and 10 minutes to write her lengthy email. The email, first publicized by the Daily Beast, made other outlandish claims, such as an unfounded theory that the late Supreme Court Justice Anton Scalia was murdered while being hunted for sport. Okay. By the way, Scalia died in his sleep. She also told Powell and others that copied that she was internally decapitated in a 1992 car accident, was shot in the back after submitting a tip to the FBI. Okay. She also said, she told MinnPost that she's atypical. Or apolitical, my bad. I don't vote and I'm completely bipartisan in that I dislike both parties, she said. She likes both parties so much that she went out there and immediately found mouthpieces on the one side to basically push forward this idea. But, you know, she hates both sides, though, okay? Concerned about the ability to spy on people through technology, Bourne said she got rid of her cell phone years ago and only uses a landline. She said she thinks differently from other people. You don't say. And admits her life is a little strange. You don't say. Just a little bit. Bourne's email came to light in court filings that include hundreds of pages of testimony, private text messages, and emails from top Fox News journalists and executives that have been made public in the defamation lawsuit filed by Dominion in Delaware Superior Court. These documents show that Fox was in crisis after the election, having alienated core viewers by being the first in election night to call Arizona for Biden. Dominion says they show that Fox News hosts were more interested in appeasing those viewers than accurately reporting that the 2020 election wasn't stolen, even if they themselves did not believe that there was voter fraud. And yes, Dominion claims Fox News personalities and guests amplified claims that the company rigged the 2020 election, even though many in the network knew the allegations were false. Documents made public in the lawsuit show less than an hour after receiving it, Powell forwarded Bourne's email to Maria Bartiromo, and the Fox News host allowed Powell on air to air claims of vote switching Dominion's algorithm in an interview the next day. Dominion's lawsuit against Fox asks, what was the evidence for these far-fetched claims that Powell sent to Bartiromo the day before the broadcast? An email entitled Election Fraud Info Powell Had Received from a Source, in quotes, which author herself describes as pretty wackadoodle. This email, also received by Dobbs, alleged Dominion was the one common thread in the voting irregularities in the number of states. Once again, voting irregularities that didn't exist. Dominion's lawsuit says Bartiromo and Dobbs never disclosed the existence of Bourne's email. A spokeswoman for Fox told MinnPost in a statement neither Bartiromo nor her producer used Bourne's email in their coverage. She said that during her deposition, Bartiromo testified repeatedly that she did not know who the writer was and didn't remember seeing the email beyond forwarding it to her producer to check out. So, and by the way, let's call the bull on that, okay? She basically, she gets an email, forwards it to producer. She's, if you're, you know exactly what's in that email if you do that. A Fox News spokeswoman conceded, however, that Bartiromo's show gave Powell the opportunity to advance Bourne's theories. To Fox News, the defamation suit is an attack on the First Amendment rights. You can't do what you did, though. You basically, you knowingly lied. You knowingly lied to basically push a narrative. You can't, that's not protected by the First Amendment. You can't yell fire in a theater when there's no fire there. And that's what you basically did. In the statement, the network said its court's filing showed Dominion had been caught red-handed using more distortions and misinformation in their PR campaign to smear Fox News and trample the free speech and freedom of the press. But to Dominion, Fox's willingness to allow the propaganda of uncorroborated information like Bourne shows malice. Bourne told MinnPost she sent Powell the email about Dominion because the lawyer activist was the face of the voter fraud movement. So I thought, let's give her some information and let her be the starting point, Bourne said. She also said she was surprised Powell did not do anything to advance the so-called findings that the sole email and has had no contact with any of those she reached out to with her allegations of Dominion. They didn't go further, she said. That's unfortunate for them. Bourne said it was her civic duty to send the email that appears central to Fox's voter fraud campaign. It's sort of what the Department of Homeland Security says. If you see something, say something. But you didn't see anything. You don't have any evidence they did all of this. You just made these allegations. And so you didn't see anything, but then you said something. At least how it is. Raised in Fridley, born 58, said she soon realized I was different from the people I grew up with. I wanted to see the world. I just knew there was way more than just Minnesota, she said. My life is one adventure after another. Bourne said she traveled extensively for a technology analyst, lived in Arizona for about 10 years, wrote two self-published books on nanotechnology, one for children. She said she stopped working as a nanotechnology consultant after the internet allowed others to type the research she was skilled at. My position was declining, she said. Now back in Minnesota, she creates art that evokes what she says were very happy years in Arizona, making cactuses and other desert-themed pieces out of folded paper, crystals, glitter, and other materials. She said she's no stranger to celebrity, claiming to have been the consultant for some of the world's top CEOs, including Tim Cook of Apple. That relationship could not be verified. In any case, Bourne said she is content to make her art and watch the weirdness of the world. Now, I will be the first to say this. Although, clearly, I would be very concerned and lawyering up if I was Bourne. Because, I'll tell you what, we're running a little late here. I'll save that. Come on back. I'll talk more about this. I got some more excerpts from her email as well. And really here, let's just call out, I'll call out Sidney Powell and Lou Dobbs here quite a bit, and Bartiromo for that matter, when I do return. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Yes, she did say she was internally decapitated. Internally decapitated. That's a neat trick. That's is that what the kids call it nowadays? Honey, what are you doing in the bathroom? Stop it! I'm internally decapitating myself! All right, okay. All right. You know, by the way, if you go to Amsterdam, you have to pay extra for that. I'm just going to let you know. Just keep your expectations there. I am just going to say this as an observation to this. I'm not saying it's real. I'm just saying as I read through this, I do not think this woman is well. I do get the impression here, even as the fallout of the consequences of what she initiated with this email are undeniable, that Fox News is screwed. And this is, by the way, the other voting company as well is suing them for more money. And that lawsuit was just said they could go ahead with that one. At no point does it seem like she herself has, at least I didn't pick this up from the story, feeling like, boy, I was wrong. Boy, I mean, I found some stuff on the internet. I can't really find where that was. I don't know who was saying it, but, you know, clearly as I go back and read the email, I was wrong on this. And boy, oh boy, I can't believe they took me at my word. Because frankly, once Dominion's done with Fox News, I got to imagine they're going to come knocking on your door with some paperwork. I'm going to read more from this email. This is the email she sent Sidney Powell, Lou Dobbs, and Tom Fitton. How was this done in conjunction with a company by the name of SCYTL, which provides electronic night reporting and other online electronic management tools? You'd think that kind of hugely important software would be developed and managed by a U.S. company or the U.S. government itself, but no, it's based in Spain, which means it's the Spanish who decide who wins our elections and who doesn't. Okay, the Spanish, mind you. By the way, shout out to Todd Collett, who's out in Spain right now. Man, enjoy some paella, because if the Spanish are going to come take over here, Patrick, paella and the Spanish red wines, man, you and I are going to have a great time, okay? I personally welcome our Spanish overlords, frankly.
I thought about that very statement, and then you took it before I said it.
Boy, have you seen the Spanish women? I'm not against this whole thing. They're quite beautiful. So hey, come on in. Once again, this is from Bourne's email that set this whole thing off with Fox News. Or do they? It's a bit of a corporate shell game with hundreds of companies involved. Remind you, she apparently is saying she sent this after just doing a little bit of research. And while it appears that the ultimate parent company is actually British, food takes a big step down there. All right, I'm going to let you know. I find it interesting the owner is French. Oh, we're getting all the countries involved here. Here's a project for curious investigative journalists to dig into. You might want to see what ties SCYTL company executives all the way up the shell company food chain have to the SSCI, because that is the root of the root. That is the root of the root of everything here, the base of the pyramid, so to speak. In that respect, Daniel Jones, a Feinstein staffer, and his newly formed Penn Quarter Group are the fulcrum. Okay. Getting really into building pyramids here at this point. By the way, the magic sweet spot of 3% isn't arbitrary. That's what American Express charges merchants as a transaction fee. Okay. And also happens to be the cut that Jared Kushner gets from all donations to the GOP, which is line itemed in the software he helped create with his brother. I think it is a transaction fee. I thought I'd throw that in there in the interest of fairness to both sides. All right, sure. Anyway, that's not me saying anyway. That's in the email. Anyway, there's also an issue with mail-in paper ballots. Not the absentee ballots, but the mail-in ballots arbitrarily sent to people, the ones that keep mysteriously appearing in the middle of the night when this man comes by and he's wearing this outfit that says U.S. Postal Service and he's dropping things into mailboxes. What's going on there? Actually, no. I'll go back to the last sentence she said. I added, I embellished, my bad. The ones that keep mysteriously appearing in the middle of the night. The paper used to print those does not have a special watermark as it's being reported. Instead, the paper fibers were embedded with anti-counterfeiting security features to detect fraud, much like how the Treasury embeds security features into paper money. I bet it's digital DNA nanotechnology. Wow, who is paying for all this? The nanobots that are in our ballots? Because that's got to be pricey. That's got to be like, you know, wealthy tech exec taking a rocket into space. Also, from her email. As for Mr. Dobbs, are you a ward? Okay, so I'm thinking that's supposed to be aware. Are you a ward that Mr. Ailes, Mr. Murdoch, and the handful other non-U.S. owners of a major U.S. media outlet secretly huddle most days to determine how best to portray Mr. Trump as badly as possible? Once again, she's claiming, okay, Fox News basically couldn't spoon with that dude enough for his presidency up until January 6th when they started realizing, okay, this is a problem. And those lawsuits were handed down. But she, who she says is nonpartisan, is insisting that Donald Trump has gotten the raw deal from the ever-loving Fox News at that point. The global hatred of the man has everything to do with the fact that, as a political outsider, Mr. Trump has disrupted the well-oiled global money laundering operation, one that revolves around the Congress critters, lobbyists, and public relation firms. There are trillions at stake. Never come between a thief and his money. By the way, a funny note there. Do you know how much money Trump made? I think it's lost here. The recent COVID release bills are simply one mechanism to try to feed money they've lost out on over the past 4 years back into that system. She sounds like a delight, doesn't she? This is a bag of cats in email form. That's oh my God. And once again, I want to make sure we understand this. Marlene Bourne sent this email. Now, not recently, maybe 5-6 years ago, maybe back in the old Morning Grind days, I occasionally would get an email that was nuts. I mean cray cray. And I don't mean cray cray for the Tay-Tay. That's crazy for Taylor Swift. No, this is just cray cray. It was conspiracy theories and Mr. Magoo it's the damn Bolivians. They're at it again. That sort of thing. And you know what I did with that when I got those emails? I hit delete. I don't need to read this. This person doesn't seem to be very stable. Henceforth, it's not there. I've read this email that was sent to Sidney Powell, Lou Dobbs, and Tom Fitton, and they took it as evidence, a source. That's the real problem here in this whole thing is supposedly intelligent people got this word salad, refrigerator magnet poetry that had just gone through a cyclone and said, you know what? Let's run with it. And what it came down to, and this is something I've talked about with Trump, and it's clear that Marlene Bourne is a fan of Trump. At least some of the things here really show that this is not necessarily, as she says, I mean, she does take a shot at Jared Kushner there. She grossly mischaracterizes what Rupert Murdoch was doing with Trump back during the Trump presidency. He couldn't do it. I mean, how many days a week was he on Fox and Friends in the Morning, unabridged? unedited. Just come on in. You can talk about anything you want to. It was pretty common. I mean, he interviewed, you know, Hannity interviewed him like four times, five times. Yeah. It's clear she's a fan of Trump's. It's clear that Sidney Powell and Lou Dobbs and Tom Fitton all were fans of Trump. I have said that the control that that dude had and still to this day has over his supporters, it comes down to, and I've described it so bluntly as, he is a guy who, he basically looks at them and says, even though that these individuals are 50-time losers, that basically that you're not the loser. All the other people who wronged you, they're the real loser. And he has the ability, and we talk about Teflon Dons in regards to presidents, and that you can look at the presidents that basically nothing really stuck to, and they have that character, they have that ability to kind of get through these things. What Trump's real ability was to look at the marginalized, whether rightly marginalized or not rightly marginalized, and made them look like the victim. It's similar to when a Republican comes on out there and says, if not for that 20 cents that they take out of your taxes to feed hungry people once a week, you'd be a billionaire. And the people responsible are those Democrats. And at no point it's about the math. At no point it's about the reality. It's about creating a false reality that you are somehow entitled to, although completely unattainable. And then once you convince that person, yeah, I'm supposed to be a billionaire, they point to them and say, they're the reason that you're not a billionaire. What Trump did was that only he did it with their personal failures, which was far more addictive. And the reason why a lot of his followers will follow him off the cliff, even if they see he's going off the cliff, I'm coming behind you, is because the personal failures are the ones which really haunt most people in their lives. And if you're sitting there and you don't like your life and you don't like your job and you don't like your house and you don't like your spouse and you don't like all these things, he came on out there and said, it's not you, it's all them. And all of a sudden that house had 40 Trump flags in front of it. Sidney Powell, Lou Dobbs, Tom Fitton, all of them. I don't know so much about Fitton, but I can say for sure about Powell and Dobbs. They might be a lawyer with connections and a TV personality at one point, but they're the same thing. They're the same exact thing as lost souls who looked at Trump as their savior. And they're so blind to anything else. They're so desperate to keep that narrative alive that they're the real victim, that they will sit there and they'll say anything. And so in the aftermath of this election, this email gets sent and the people who should have had the brain power to say, my God, no, this is not real, did not turn it away. I am actually very concerned about Marlene Bourne. I am. But I will say this, it'll be interesting to, and by the way, can I say this about the MyPillow guy? Doesn't he fall kind of into that parameters as well? I'd be very concerned if I were her, there would be a knock on the door for a lawsuit that's coming your way. But as well, I'm you know, just reading this story, I'm a little concerned. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Now, I want to make a plea here and a completely different story here. I want to go down a different path on a different issue. But I want to just remind people here that, I, you know, for many years I was a Metro Traffic reporter. I did Metro Traffic for 5 years, 6 years. And I learned a lot about transit, and we need mass transit. We need mass transit. Even in our modern day, we need to have mass transit. We need to have good transit, because right now the Republicans' mentality is just build roads, and there's just no way in the planet you can build enough roads to offset the amount of traffic we have. And on top of it, if I don't drive, that doesn't help me. This is why two of these stories today kind of upset me. One, Metro Transit will lock the doors of a troubled uptown transit station at 10 p.m. Wednesday, and the indoor waiting facility on Hennepin Avenue won't reopen until a new security measure is in place this spring. Rampant property damage, vandalism, drug use, and other activities that don't involve people waiting for the bus led to the transit agencies to take the drastic step, instead of Metro Transit spokesman Drew Kerr. With all of our facilities, the intention for them is to amenity for customers. People need that space to stay warm while they're waiting for their trip to arrive. Closing this facility is not what we'd like to do. It's necessary to stem the abuse. You open this up in Uptown. I have been in Uptown a good chunk of my life. How in the world did you not think this was going to happen, for goodness sakes? This is not like it. There, you know, you're out in the middle of rural Minnesota, and all of a sudden people are living in a transit station you put out there. You have this there. There's always been drug use. There's always been homelessness. This has always been an issue. How in the world do you open these facilities and not have security there? If you go to major cities, there's security at their mass transit. It's a mistake. And this basically, you know, it kind of, you know, makes things look bad, to say the least. Metropolitan Council went ahead with the $2.7 billion Southwest Light Rail project despite knowing it did not have the funds necessary to complete the line linking Minneapolis and Eden Prairie, according to a report released on Wednesday morning by the Office of Legislative Auditor. The highly critical report says the regional planning body was not fully transparent with the public about the ballooning costs and delays for Southwest, which nearly 10 years behind schedule and is about $1 billion over budget. Now, I have been very quick to say that I have, and it's been very clear that I have been very angry that we did not hold the contractors who put their bids in to the bids that they put in. You can do that. They're supposed to factor in these things, potential cost overruns, delays, stuff like that. It doesn't sound like it sounds like the Met Council didn't do their due diligence. The report found that pre-construction engineering analysis conducted by the Met Council failed to predict the difficulties of the building of the tunnel for light rail trains in Minneapolis's Kenworth neighborhood between Lake of the Isles and Cedar Lake. Construction on the narrow corridor must be accommodating both light rail freight trains along with bike and pedestrian paths as well. The council also made several serious missteps in construction, continued with the report noting a mismatch between the organizations developing light rail projects in Minnesota and those building them. Among the findings in the report, before construction began in earnest in 2019, the FTA raised concerns about the Met Council's ability to cover unexpected cost overruns. Their FTA is a key funder of the Southwest project through a $929 million grant. By early 2022, the council was obligated to spend more money to finish the project than it had available, but also didn't have the adequate funds to halt the project. Through the Met Council, new project costs were increasing beyond the budget. It developed no formal contingency plans to temporarily or permanently stop the project. The council solicited bids for the main construction work while knowing that the specifications did not include a $93 million crash wall near Target Field to separate freight and light trains and the addition of the Eden Prairie Town Center station. That's on you guys then. The council failed to hold accountable its civil contractor Luda McCrossin joint venture for repeated failures to provide an acceptable project schedule. LMJV blamed the council for the delays, which the council later conceded was true. So it sounds like Met Council screwed this up. Now, yeah, what's done is done. I don't believe in the Republican mentality of leave the project undone as a monument to never try to do it again, because they're stupid, and that's a really big waste of our taxpayer dollars. But I will say this. You guys effing this stuff up and badly does not help our city. Right now in Tennessee, they're putting in a whole bunch of those Lexus lanes like we have around the metro area where wealthy people can fly past traffic and I can just pay my way past. Now, mass transit, anyone can use. The Lexus lanes, you have to be wealthy, you have to have a car, you have to have a driver's license. So it's very limited. And none of them have ever made their money back. They all run in the red. But Republicans love them because it gives wealthy people a class-tier roadway system. I don't like Republican transportation policy. It's toll roads and Lexus lanes. It's bad. So stop screwing up and get your damn acts together and act like you're adults. And maybe we can get this stuff fixed, okay? We're back tomorrow. Until then, see ya.